Stand by. Baron Gosky realized this was rapidly adding up to a dead operative. Much as she liked Phillips, his death would be marginally easier to handle from a political perspective than his capture. But she had to be sure. She needed confirmation, and not from the Sangheili. I'm betting Kilo 5 could infiltrate Sangelios. I'd lose some of them, though, and it'd be politically messy for everyone. On the other hand, I could play this straight, and use the leverage I've already got. The mission, destabilizing Sangelios, came first. There were many ways to skin that proverbial cat. Hood could do what he seemed to do best, dealing man to man, handshake to handshake, with Thel Vadam, the arbiter. She drained her coffee and made a beeline for Hood. Del Rio saw her coming and melted away. "I think I'm finally enjoying my Medusa reputation," she said, forcing a laugh out of Hood. "Women normally become invisible to men at the age of 40, but he can obviously still see me." "Yes, I warned him not to look directly at you, merely to gaze on your reflection for his own safety." Even Hood's sarcasm was gracious. Baron Gosky still liked him, for all his excessive optimism. "You really don't care for the cut of his jib, do you, Margaret?"
"No, I do not."
"He's a safe pair of hands. We won't get any surprises from him. And he's Halsey-proof. She won't be able to manipulate him." Baron Gosky kept walking. "You don't have to sell him to me any longer. He already has the ship. And you have Lasky. And you'll need Lasky one day when Del Rio can't politic his way out of a tight spot. Why do you always go for the straight-as-a-die, man-of-the-people types?"
"Because they're so unlike me, my dear. My morbid fascination with the exotic."
"So you feel you have your budget's worth?"
"I'm satisfied we've got a vessel that'll not only loosen Sangheili bowels, but that can also vaporize them."
"I'm hoping it won't come to that again."
"Do you have a few minutes to walk with me, Terence? I promise it'll be leisurely. It's my only speed setting these days." Hood followed her out into the passage, hands clasped behind his back. The long, dimly lit, half-finished passage echoed with their footsteps. Somewhere on a deck below, someone was hammering metal, a strangely old-fashioned noise in a state-of-the-art warship.
"Is this about Phillips?" Hood asked.
"He's still missing. If he's been killed, I'm going to take a very dim view of that."
"How dim? Remember that we have a peace treaty with the Arbiter, Margaret."
"But the Arbiter's not immortal, and he's facing another civil war. I need to find Phillips."
"I'm sure the Arbiter's searching for him."
Baron Gosky trod carefully. Hood knew she'd be monitoring everyone's comms, but there was no point in ramming it down his throat. "I think I'd rather have our own people involved in that, if only to make it clear that we're not the underdogs any longer." Hood didn't say a word for a while and carried on walking, matching his pace to hers.
"That's what they used to call a very big ask," he said.
"Yes, I'm asking. But I think you would be best placed to actually raise it with him."
"So you want to insert who, exactly?"
"Kilo 5.
"This ask is getting rather large. What if he refuses?"
"I'm damned if I'm leaving a man behind. I need a body, dead or alive."
"So you're telling me you'll insert an extraction team, whether he agrees to it or not?"
"Yes."
"Quite apart from the size of the task, we can't trample on their sovereignty like that."
"Then why are you allocating more than half the fleet budget to Infinity? We don't need her to handle human insurgents." Hood almost smiled.
"Perhaps I want to stop you owning her outright." You don't trust the Sangheili any more than I do.
No, but that doesn't mean I want to restart the war. Any politically aware man would have expected Oni to try to destabilize the Sangheili. Dirty tricks had long been the textbook method for neutralizing threats.
He doesn't want to know. He'd rather be able to look the Arbiter in the eye and feel he was technically telling him the truth.
Hood was a gentleman, but not an idealist. That was a relief. Barangoski had covered a lot of deck today, and her knees were killing her. She ground to a halt at the doors to the atrium, a vast, transparent dome over a space the size of a park. When she held up her datapad and checked it against the schematic, oxygen-generating plants and ergonomic seating snapped into place to give her a three-dimensional impression of what a pleasant and huge area it would be. There were already some specimens basking in artificial sunlight, a few ginkgo trees and a Paraná pine.
Lavish, she said, looking for a raw nerve she could twang.
It was hard to find one in a seasoned horse trader like Hood.
I realize habitability is important, but I hope none of our hard-pressed ODSTs or green jobs see this.
The ship's complement is more than 17,000. Long deployments. Half the crew never even meet one another. We have to think in terms of the human dynamics of a small city.
Of course we do.
They'd played this fencing game far too often and for too many years to fool each other. But Barangoski detected just a little defensiveness creeping in, a whiff of guilt. Hood didn't like the suggestion that he gave some personal privileges that the ground troops didn't get.
Good. That was the idea.
When do you want the Sangheili to know we have her? Hood ambled across an empty deck that reminded Barangoski more of the Colosseum than a plaza.
When we have those new drives online. So what are we going to do about Phillips?
Osman's on our way to Sangheili's. But if we don't find him fairly quickly, I think that the presence of a very large warship might be helpful in a number of ways.
It's far too soon, and it's not as if the Sangheili are holding him.
Think of it as a workup exercise. A Thursday war.
We've still got contractors crawling all over the ship. Just cosmetic stuff.
Come on, Terence. She can deploy.
She's not ready.